Greetings! Just Nate and Katie today. David is recovering from a lot of madness over the last week. He had an intense vacation on a floating toilet with hundreds of strangers and then returned home to see the Kings, having traded their franchise centerpiece to New Orleans. And Dave has pretty much been, well, I mean, up until yesterday afternoon, he's pretty much at the station from about within an hour of the time that DeMarcus got traded till yesterday afternoon. So I think he mostly slept here, and he probably more than anything else is just doing damage control at home for having not seen his wife and kids for 3 days. That's not true. I'm making stuff up, but
well,
I mean, he may as well have been, because he was here late Sunday, early, well, no, I'm sorry, late Monday, early Tuesday.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. We were here.
It is what it is.
We were here late, whatever.
From the mouths of babes.
Even last night, I didn't sleep so well. I also had flu symptoms last night and was really, like, throughout the night was like, okay, I don't know how I'm going to be in the morning. I'll just wait until the alarm goes off at 4 o'clock and see how I'm feeling. I got up and I was like, yep, going to work.
Still a lot to get to.
Going to work.
Still a lot to get to in the final 2 hours. Bobby Marks, a front office insider for The Vertical, is going to be with us at 8:05. Now, just real quick, I did want to, because you're not feeling well either. You were supposed to be on vacation this week, part of this week. Dave was on vacation last week. We were supposed to have a 3-day weekend on Monday. I was out of town. You guys came back. I thought it was funny yesterday, and I didn't really point this out to you guys, but both you and Dave were, hey, well, how'd you like your vacation? How'd you like it? Listen, guys, I was here last week. I wasn't on vacation. I didn't do that. I had one extra day. One, Katie. I had one.
Yeah.
That's all.
I know.
I just thought it was funny. You guys, how was your vacation? You guys were on vacation.
Well,
I was here.
No, but vacation, just everyone.
Your face is a vacation. Get out of it.
Okay. We're going to stop this conversation.
My business. Okay, so.
I mean, you had President's Day. It was a vacation. Normally, we work a lot of the holidays where people have Mondays off. So it's
some
kind of
us,
like a little, like, pocketed vacation day.
Some of us respect the office of the presidency, Katie. That's all I'm saying. Some of us do. Some of us.
I'm not even gonna step into that water right
now. The newest Kings arrived in town yesterday. They weren't officially introduced, but that's expected to happen, I think, today, right? Today or, maybe tomorrow. Katie, today,
yes.
You think? Do you know?
Yeah. They'll practice. Dave Yeager had met with the media yesterday, and
I know what you were reading something, right?
I was reading something on the text line about someone calling Carmichael Dave a part of the female anatomy for needing rest, because this isn't hard labor or whatever.
Those are your words. Not your words, their words.
And so, I can basically tell him to go shove it. They arrived yesterday, and it was interesting because I was pulling it up when you were talking about it as well. Langston Galloway tweeted yesterday, the fans of Sacktown just showed me love once I arrived, excited to be here. And it was interesting. Derek Williams, obviously, former King, replied to that and said, you're going to love it there, bro, especially the way that you play. I promise you, best
of all people.
I know, right? Because he had a great experience here. Not that the fans didn't love him, but he only played well, four times a year when we played Minnesota.
Right.
So, I'm excited for some of these guys. So Dave Yeager met with the media yesterday after the Kings had practice and we're going to have some sound from that a little bit later, but spoke for the longest I've seen him speak to the media since he got here, about almost a little short of 9 minutes. About everything that went down. And he said during that press conference that he is going to meet with the new members that are coming here via the trade from New Orleans this morning, try and catch them up to speed. They'll have one practice today. The Kings were very shorthanded yesterday with injuries that they've, been dealing with, and obviously with the trade happening and some guys leaving. So they had a practice yesterday, but it was mainly conditioning. So I'm assuming today they'll get into a little bit more, full court kind of five-on-five action if they have the bodies, and kind of start trying to run these guys up to speed on what Dave Yeager is doing. But, yeah, it's a difficult situation to come in, because not only do you not have a lot of time at the trade deadline to be able to integrate these guys, but from this point on, there's 25 games left in the season. If you look at the month of March, it is a ridiculous schedule. Two of those weeks, Nate, there's 5 games in 7 days. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of practice time. So integrating these guys into the system and stuff, it's going to be rocky, and they're going to have to take advantage of things like shoot around and calling plays in timeout, like drawing up new plays in timeouts. So I don't really know what to expect.
Well, the good news is that ultimately it does come back to, it's just basketball. I mean, you know, like there is going to be a learning curve. Yeah. And I mean, there's going to be an adjustment there.
Terminology really is going to be the learning curve for them, especially on the defensive end.
Yeah. But I mean, at least at some point you do get to just go out and play, you know, and you can, and I think it's a little easier that learning process than maybe like if you're a football player or something like that. And, you know, but whatever, you hope that it works out. And as far as the other side of that trade, we're going to be covering the DeMarcus Cousins introductory press conference in New Orleans. That's coming up at 8:35. But you mentioned that Dave Yeager spoke yesterday. And, you know, he said a little bit about the three new guys, Buddy Hield, Langston Galloway, Tyreek Evans, and exactly what he knows about those three. Do you believe that Tyreek Evans is going to play for the Kings?
Well, right now, just looking at numbers. And
I mean, they need the depth.
Yeah, they need the depth right now. But again, we've said this before. We don't know what's going to happen in the next 24 hours. Uh-huh. And it was reported when this trade went down that he and Langston Galloway, one or both potentially, could be either cut or waived or bought out. Uh-huh. So I don't know. And it's, if they don't make another move by the deadline, I would expect both of them to be in uniform and play. But, you know, we've got some questions here on the text line, Nate, that I want to address from the 209. It says, so Dave is known for playing his veterans and not much his young guys, and the way the direction of this team is going with the young guys, do you think that's going to change? Well, let me clarify his reputation. His reputation has, in the NBA as a head coach, has included here with the Kings and Memphis. Memphis was a perennial playoff team that was comprised mostly of veterans. So yeah, that's where that reputation came from. But if you look at his time in the CBA and the D League, where he won at both levels, won the title, he's won at every level that he's, you know, prior to coming into the NBA, and had a lot of success in Memphis. He is a coach because of that non-NBA coaching experience. He's able to, pull strings. He's going to be able to handle this. I think a lot of people are freaking out because he hasn't. And the Kings team specifically, it's like, okay, well, we had young guys and he wasn't playing them. Well, it's because we also had a lot of veterans, and he's getting the talk from the top that they want to make the playoffs. So it's really like this team has been in limbo, because you have young guys that you want to develop, but you also are getting the message that you've got veteran guys and you want to make the playoffs. So now this changes things, and I'm not worried at all about him being able to coach and develop these young guys.
No, I always, whenever you hear that about a coach, that they don't like playing rookies or whatever, that, I think, gets so overblown, because what that tells me is what that coach wants is guys he can trust on the floor. That's what it is. That's what it comes down to.
And especially that attributes to the Matt Barnes situation.
Yeah, well, and frankly, he might not have much of a choice with some of these guys.
Yeah, he does. I mean, he doesn't. And I'm not worried about it. I don't think his reputation as playing vets and not playing young guys is 100% fair. It's true because of the teams that he was coaching. Mm-hmm. It's not because he's incapable or doesn't trust young guys. So you got to kind of look a little bit at that.
Get a load of this. In 4 minutes, we've got a WNBA topic.
Hey,
but don't.
A lot of people have been freaking asking this question on the Twitter line, or on Twitter and on the text line, about my opinions on this. So guess what, guys? We're going to get into a little bit of WNBA talk. And it's really less about the WNBA and more about a player coming out saying that she was bullied because she was a straight woman in the league. So that's interesting.
So if you want to hear about straight women
in
the WNBA.
Stop, Nate! Sell it!
That's all coming up in 4 minutes on The Drive. Sports 1140 KHTK. 720 on KHTK. Nate Goodyear and Katie Christensen with you. Dave, taking a day. He's just been worn out by this DeMarcus Cousins stuff. He's actually sick, unfortunately.
He's got the flu.
Spend
which
some
I would
time
prefer
in Haiti.
Him stay home.
And then come home and don't sleep at all. Those are the type of things that happen to you. So he'll be back tomorrow. We got Bobby Marks, front office insider of The Vertical, joining us in a little over 40 minutes from now. He'll break down all the latest with trade deadline approaching, the Lakers making some moves in their front office. And then we've got the DeMarcus Cousins introductory press conference from New Orleans at 8:30. So keep it here on KHTK. One other programming note, so to speak. Do you want to do that?
Yeah,
okay,
I'll
go
do
for it. You put your hand out.
Listen to the lowdown this week to score a pair of tickets to see J. Cole happening July 15th at Oracle Arena. More information at khdk.com. J. Cole, man, I'd go see that.
Sure.
Whatever. You don't even know.
I don't. Not a clue. Popular with the kids? Is that a cool deal? I'll turn into like a 50-year-old man in a heartbeat.
I know.
When it comes to that type of stuff. Okay, we're going to step into your wheelhouse here, Katie. WNBA basketball. but not really.
This is not a story about the WNBA. This is a story about a player that came out and basically trashed the league. In my opinion, it sounds more to me like because she's kind of about to sell a book.
Well, we'll get to it.
Garnering up some attention there.
Yeah, she former number 3 overall pick in the 2008 WNBA draft. She won a championship in 2011, and she retired last March. You mentioned that she's going to be trying to sell a book soon.
Candace Wiggins, yes, out of Stanford.
So she's out kind of doing the media tour. She did an interview with the San Diego Union Tribune, and here's where it got fun. She stated, quote, 98% of the WNBA is gay, and that she would have played for 2 more years if not for the toxic environment, saying things like, let's see, here we go. Me being heterosexual and straight and being vocal in my identity as a straight woman was huge. I would say 98% of the women in the WNBA are gay women. It was a conformist type of place. There was a whole different set of rules they, being the other players, could apply. She went on to say, people were deliberately trying to hurt me all the time. I had never been called the B word so many times in my life than I was in my rookie season. I'd never been thrown to the ground so much. The message was, we want you to know that we don't like you. She, of course, went on. but this is, and before we go to your opinion as someone that has been in a locker room and can maybe provide some background as to whether 98% of the 120-some players in the WNBA, their sexual preferences. We'll get all that insight in a second. But I just want to say, from me reading this, this just looks a lot less like bullying and more like someone that just wasn't liked and got roughed up a little bit in an environment where they didn't fit in right away and didn't handle it very well.
I don't know Candace Wiggins personally. I can tell you she didn't study math at Stanford, because there is not a shot in hell that 98% of the WNBA is gay, and nor should it freaking matter.
It doesn't.
Like, this is my thing. I don't care if every single one of them is gay or if every single one of them is straight. My personal experiences in the WNBA were nothing like this. And as a straight woman, never, ever, ever did I get bullied or picked on or anything. It was such a league of inclusion, acceptance, and sisterhood. And that was my experience. It sounds a little bit more to me, and from people that I know around the league and have talked to over the last several days, Candace Wiggins wasn't liked because of her personality.
Because she wasn't likable.
It had nothing to do with anything of her sexual preference. And so for me, and she also went into detail about how no one likes the WNBA, that no one watches it, so on and so forth. It's pretty sad. Like, all of this. Do not go out and bash a league that paid you for 10 years.
Right.
If you had a problem with it, why the hell were you playing?
It throws it casts a bit of a cloud over your statement that you were bullied. Like, if you're trying to, I don't know if sympathy is the right word, but if you're trying to garner some sort of support,
and make some sort of a statement. No, she's trying to garner attention because she's selling a book.
Right. The second you turn right around and bash the league as a whole, when you're talking about ratings, viewership, stuff like that, it immediately kills all credibility. Nobody cares what you have to say about being bullied, because all you're saying is, I've got a vendetta against this league.
Gary Kloppenberg he coached me in the WNBA. He coached in Minnesota, where Candace won her WNBA title. And his father is a longtime NBA coach, and Gary's coached in the NBA as well. He sent out a few tweets yesterday. He goes, I enjoyed coaching Candace Wiggins for 2 WNBA seasons, and I was surprised by her negative comments about her time in the league. I never witnessed any situation like Candace detailed. She was an extremely hard worker, a great competitor, and a respected teammate. The WNBA is an elite-level basketball league that prides itself on being inclusive and caring about the well-being of all of its players. I could not have said it better myself. Again, everybody's experience is different in things, and a lot of these things are personality-driven. Where I take issue with it is where she is coming out and saying that because she was straight and because she was attractive and because of her choices in terms of who she's attracted to, that she was picked on. That's complete trash. And for me, it's like there are certain people in life, Nate, that no matter where they are, something's going to be wrong. And it's not because of where they are. It's because of who they are.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good – well, I think you could point to this as an example. Like, Candace – I mean, she played for a while, but I don't know that she ever lived up to the hype of being the number three pick. She kind of bounced around. This sounds a lot like – this game was really easy for her for a really, really, really long time. And then she got to a world where, hey, people are a lot more competitive and meaner.
And competing for jobs.
Yeah. Hey, guess what? The world got real on Candace on Candace Wiggins pretty quick, and she didn't respond very well. That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you as an outsider can look at it that way and maybe give a little bit of
credence. Yeah, you're here to play professional sports, yeah. Not play nice.
I know.
No one said that's the game.
If it were on the NBA side and someone were saying, yeah, you know what? I got thrown around. Exactly. That would be the thing. But in the WNBA, it's a bunch of gay women picking on a straight woman. That's so ridiculous.
Oh, poor Candace Wiggins. 90 minutes deep, guys. A fallout from the DeMarcus Cousins trade. We've got all of it. Is Tyreek going to suit up for the Kings? And Buddy Hield is here, guys. The savior. Plus Bobby Marks at 8:05. That's all coming up 4 minutes from now on The Drive. Sports 1140 KHTK.
Home of the Kings basketball.
It's not totally inaccurate. For like the first 4 or 5 years of Kings games that I got to go to, because I would get to go to one a year, we'd make the jaunt down.
Right.
I would get a Kings mini basketball.
Yeah, they sell them.
Yeah, so this is, in many ways, the home of the Kings basketball. I'm with you, Matt George.
I appreciate that.
Nate Goodyear, Katie Christensen with you. We're at the midway point, and in about 30 minutes from now, Bobby Marks, the front office insider for the Vertical, is going to take us through all the latest happenings in the NBA with the trade deadline approaching and the Lakers making some front office shakeups and Vlade Divac making moves and speaking to the media and so on and so forth.
Shedding a little light yesterday on Grant's show about kind of why things fell through with potentially a different deal that he said was better, pointing the finger at agents, kind of messing that up, which, you know what? I'm not surprised to hear.
You know, and we have that audio too. We'll make sure that we cover that. And we're also going to have DeMarcus's introductory press conference in New Orleans. That's coming up at 8:35 as well. So as we kind of dive into that trade a little bit more, Katie, you know, you said that Vlade had spoke. You know, he is still trying to do mop-up duty, much like it seems, I don't know, like a lot of the people that have been in charge of this team, doing mop-up duty for a slip of the tongue once again. And, I mean, what a stark contrast this is from, say, the Jeff Petrie era. And I know that we spend way too much time as Kings fans, like, longing for the past. But at this point, I don't know that there's anything that Vlade can say that's not going to blow up in his face.
Yeah, I mean, it comes to a point, Nate, where it doesn't really matter what, you know, ownership, front office, any of those people are saying. Mm-hmm. It comes down to whether or not fans are happy with the product on the court. And at this point, it's a little bit of a period where no one really knows what to expect. DeMarcus Cousins is gone, and whether or not people loved him or hated him, no one can argue with his production and what he was able to do. And he is a star caliber, franchise caliber player. And now you look at the roster and you're like, okay, what do we have? And even now, we don't know what this team is going to look like tomorrow when they take the court tomorrow night. Like, there's no telling, because the trade deadline obviously is tomorrow at 12 o'clock, you know, Pacific Standard Time. And there's still three guys on this roster who have been mentioned in trade talks or to be on the trading block, which is Darren Collison. That obvious because he's in the final year of his contract. Mm-hmm. You've got Ben McLemore and Aaron Aflalo. Aaron a little bit older. Ben's, you know, only been a King in his four seasons, but they're both shooting guards. And that is one thing that, where in the beginning of the season, it's like, okay, that wasn't the strongest position. it was more the front court being heavily loaded. Mm-hmm. Now it's the complete opposite. That position is backloaded ridiculously.
And one of the things, I mean, aside from there's been a positional logjam for the Kings at multiple spots over the last few years. And part of that can come back to one of the statements Vlade made in trading DeMarcus Cousins, was that this was a move to improve the culture. That's what you hear about a lot. And, you know, that a lot of times can result in a roster that's not necessarily made up in a final form or like anything that's recognizable so much as it's just you try to find nice guys. And that comes back to, again, you're cashing checks that, or you're writing checks that are going to be difficult to cash. And Dave Yeager spoke yesterday in regards to coaching culture guys. Seems like he was not so thrilled with the move.
I don't know how Coach Yeager felt about it. He was asked also in that press conference if he was involved in the discussions and knew what was coming down. And I don't know that I've really got a straight answer in terms of what it was.
Well, let's hear what he has to say.
Yeah.
Where do you suspect? I mean, if ultimately, and I mean, I'm not asking you to like divulge anything that, you know, maybe you'd be privy to that you don't want to share, but just if you were to speculate, you think Dave Yeager is pleased with that trade? And again, not about the return for it, but where do you think he stands on the idea of moving forward without DeMarcus? Because, well, I mean, you heard him say very clearly, talent wins.
Yeah, I think it comes down to one thing, is where he was with DeMarcus was not knowing whether or not he was going to be here at all. So at least now he knows what he's got moving forward. And you asked me earlier, kind of off air before the show started, about where I stand with whether or not this trade is a good or a bad thing. And my opinion, truthfully, is that I think it's a good thing. Love DeMarcus, love what he's able to do, but he was here for 6.5 years and didn't seem to be going in the right direction with this franchise. So at some point, I think you cut your losses and for both parties. And it wasn't a good fit for DeMarcus. As much as he loved this community and all of that, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. They weren't able to put a product on the floor that was winning. And I think where I am with a lot of Kings fans is it's not about whether or not he's here or gone. It's about what you got in return. So that is what it comes down to. But I can also concede that his behavior and antics on the floor very much drove down his value. And that is the reality of the situation. So I'm not privy to a lot of things. I'm not behind the scenes. I'm not, you know, on the phone listening in when Vlade is talking to agents and other teams. So I don't know what the offers were or what they had. The reality is he's gone. We have what we have from that deal. And now it's about moving forward. And so Dave Yeager is in a situation right now where he also doesn't really know what it's going to be like moving forward. All he can do is go out there and coach the guys that they put in front of him. Whether or not he's involved in the decisions or not, I don't know that we're ever going to know or that it even matters. His job is to coach the players on the floor, and that is what he will do. And I have a lot of faith in Dave Yeager because of his past, not because of his time in Memphis and success there. Like, he's just a guy that is going to go out there and he's going to coach the guys and he's going to get them to play hard. And I think that we talked about chemistry and stuff like that. This team's chemistry was the best I've seen it in years. Maybe since I've been here this season.
But they weren't winning?
Exactly.
Oh my goodness.
I think that has a little bit to do with Dave Yeager and his staff.
Yeah.
So
I have no worries about the coaching staff. What I think about now is this franchise has done, well, let's be honest, since ownership took over, they have continued to stumble over most of the hurdles that have been put in front of them, short of opening a new building and getting a team on the floor there. Almost everything has been a colossal misstep, whether it's the firing of coaches or GMs or how they've handled things. You know, whatever's going on, it has not been good. This is another PR hit, getting rid of DeMarcus Cousins, that they're just going to have to eat. And all the stuff that came out, whether it was because of Vivek's love of the Warriors or any of those various things. But they've got to move forward now. It's over. It's done.
Yeah, a lot of people are like, well, with what? What are we moving forward with?
I
don't freaking know.
I would go back to how much of their reputational damage and financial damage could have been undone. You might not have Dave Yeager right now, but if they would have just listened to George Karl and traded the guy when he told them. When a Hall of Famer and, you know, what, the winningest coach, one of the winningest coaches in NBA history, I said this at the time, the Kings are going to lose the PR battle to George Karl. I don't care if he showed up and tanked it for 6 months, okay? It doesn't matter. That guy's reputation is going to live on. And I'll say it again now, when that guy walks in the building.
His reputation was a little bit damaged by the book that he wrote? Kind of showing maybe that he's a little bit of an ass.
I think everyone already knew that about George Karl. Like, that's ultimate. And I'm not saying that he wasn't at fault. But what I'm saying is, again, this guy's a Hall of Famer. And when he walks in the building and the first thing he says is, we can't win with this dude. We got to trade him. And they fight back on him, and that's why he ends up pouting for 6 months and stealing millions of dollars from them. Maybe you could have avoided that all along if you had listened to the one guy in the building that had experience with this, that has been around the league,
that's the problem.
A friggin' Hall of Famer.
That's the problem. George Karl never should have been here in the first place.
That's probably true.
Like, this isn't a George Karl thing. This goes back for the decisions that have been made for quite some time with this team.
Sure it does. And they had one guy that came in that told him to change it. And they are like, ah, well, you know what? We'd rather throw you under the bus.
Former ownership and front office, before they left, before they were just now a piece of the past, before that happened, when that transition was made, that suggestion was shared. Mm-hmm. Hey, for what it's worth, we've been doing this for a very long time. Just our suggestion. Maybe you might want to consider going a different route.
Nobody listened. Well, but hey, and now you've got, you know, Buddy Hield to show for it. And you got Tyreke Evans back, so that's good. 25-5. I mean, he can do that again on this team, I'm sure. You want to talk to some people on the phone lines?
Yes.
Steve wants to join us. Hey, Steve, you're on the drive. What's up?
Yeah, I know we're kind of looking through the retrospective scope and we're trying to move forward, but I just thought I would put this out because I think going forward you can learn a little bit from the past. And I just wonder if the organization did everything they could to support DeMarcus while he was here. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, the mentoring that he was getting from Shaq and all the other people who are calling him for support. I'm just talking about when you got a guy who's got basically a new coach every year, who's he going to be able to bond with? And I think the only way you're going to get somebody to change their behavior is to develop a bond of trust. And the only way you're going to be able to get that bond of trust is to develop a relationship. And I also often wonder, too, sometimes if the organization did enough between the lines to support him. Because if you look at the way he was reacting, I never saw a lot of technicals come from the bench, as many as I would have always thought otherwise. And if you go back to a guy like Mark Cuban, when the Dallas Mavericks were an upstart, he would go out publicly and lambast the officials when he felt that his team was not getting its due. And I just didn't see that kind of support that was going on publicly. Now, it may have happened behind the scenes, and it may have happened to the point where the NBA was just turning a deaf ear to it. But it really didn't seem like it could have happened, or it should have happened more to the point where maybe DeMarcus felt like he had to take it on himself to, ply his own case to try to get those calls.
Thanks for the call, Steve.
The biggest mistake this organization made was the firing of Mike Malone. I went and said it when it happened. I still believe it. I think that set them back 10 years. Here was a guy, Rudy Gay and DeMarcus were both, and I know they had issues between themselves, but they were starting to buy into the system. They had a very good start that season. And, when DeMarcus went down and got hurt for whatever reason, management, ownership was hearing whispers and getting seduced by the likes of the George Karl. And I think that was a huge mistake for the team. So I think when you're talking about culture, you got to have consistency. And I think you also have to have the back of the players there. And I think once the players have that, I think they'll do their part.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah. A lot of good points, but I'm never going to say that the franchise didn't have DeMarcus's back. It doesn't matter who the owner was. The second he walked in, he had control of that place. They had opportunities where they were told they needed to discipline him. They did not. Yeah. He had free reign of that place. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend that the Kings handled everything right. I think they have colossally mismanaged DeMarcus Cousins from the second he walked in the building. But to say that he didn't have the organization's support, that's nonsense.
Yeah, well, I think this is going to come down to one thing. DeMarcus Cousins, because he was drafted here to Sacramento and because of what happened while he was here, I think he will always be an enigma in the NBA. Mm-hmm. It's like one of those situations where you can talk about the instability from top to bottom from the moment that he came in, the lack of players provided and put around him, and then maybe the mentorship. We can talk about that till we're blue in the face. Nothing is ever going to change. We're never going to know.
At some point, he's got to accept it too,
exactly.
Right?
And maybe this is the situation for him where it's a turnaround. I hope so for him. I want him to have success, and I want for him to enjoy the game of basketball because at the end of the day, I enjoyed watching him when he was dominating the game, playing. I didn't need all the other crap that went on the court. That was not fun to watch.
But if
it
you're
going to
turn in a
40-point
triple-double, I'll pay money to watch
that. I hope for him that this is a new start and it can turn things around. But we've had this conversation before, and because of what happened here, we'll never know. Would it have been different for DeMarcus Cousins when he comes out of the draft, if he would have been under a Phil Jackson as a coach, a Jerry Sloan, a Greg Popovich? Would it have changed his behavior and demeanor? If you want to talk about mentorship, is that what would have happened? Would it be different? I don't know that it would have, but I agree with you. You can't say this organization did not support him and had his back. They did to his detriment.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you can still, again, we can also live in a world where many things are true, where the Kings had his back to a fault and still managed to screw it up. Because I'll agree with the Michael Malone thing. I don't know that it's their biggest mistake because they've made so many colossal mistakes over the last few years, but it was definitely a big one. And it all comes back to, you know, DeMarcus getting sick over something freakish, like contracting meningitis. Are you kidding me? That's a total accident. But, you know, I would also, so the one time they did get the coach right, then they managed to turn around and screw it up. And I mean, you could also go back to all of the other guys that did coach him that weren't good enough and haven't found a job ever since.
Yeah.
You know, there are plenty of guys out there that are not great coaches that keep jobs because they have a superstar that can win games because they, you know, they don't get out of the way. Is Keith Smart that big of a disaster as a coach? He hasn't gotten a chance since then. But I mean,
Paul Westphal,
like, are those guys such absolute disasters that I don't know? It's complicated. Is the guy a coach killer? Probably not. Those guys haven't done anything since.
Is he uncoachable? No, I don't. I think Michael Malone kind of proved that point.
But I think it takes a very special guy to do it. And here's the other thing, too. I like Michael Malone. Don't get me wrong. But we got to quit humping that 10-game stretch with that guy, with DeMarcus Cousins, okay? When Michael Malone finishes a season over 500, that'll be the first time he does that, okay? So let's just tap the brakes a little bit. Michael Malone might have been the best coach that the Kings had in DeMarcus Cousins' time, but Michael Malone is an extremely average to mediocre NBA coach right now, and he's still got to prove otherwise.
We're always going to have this conversation because this is what bad teams do.
Yeah.
This is what happens when a team does not have a winning product on the floor. You hearken back to the days when things were great.
Plenty
of things wrong with this team and this organization when they were winning and in the playoffs. But those weren't discussed because wins. There was W's in the column and not the L's, right? And so until it changes, this is what is always going to be the conversation. We're going to talk about the what ifs, the DeMarcus this, the coaching this, like all of the front office ownership, all of the things that happen are going to be amplified because there's nothing else to talk about.
So much, and like chemistry just becomes such a buzzword. Like, I think we can all agree that you don't want to employ a-holes, right? But that is basically as extreme as it needs to get, because other than that, what creates the best kind of culture? That's winning games.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's such a chicken or the egg thing. You say that the Kings had the best chemistry that they've had in years. Look at where it got them, right? I mean, it just doesn't. You have, like, if you're winning games, you don't have a lot of unhappy teams that are winning games. And if you do, it's probably because, like, they won a title last year and they've got the disease of more.
You know, now there's always drama, though. You look at LeBron and all the crap going on in Cleveland, because that, to me, is is the most laughable thing. You're talking about someone who is the best player in the game, and he has a plethora of talent surrounding him, and they're the defending champions, yet he's over there griping and trolling his own general manager and ownership in the media, on social media, because he doesn't feel they have enough. It's like, I feel like this day and age, people just bitch and moan about every damn thing. Really, when it's all you need to do, shut up and go and play. That bothers me to the ends of the earth. When someone like LeBron James, with the talent and the team and the support that he has from that city, from that franchise, you're going to complain? Shut up
He's the
and
boss,
play.
Man.
If you're the best player, if you're the best player in the world, then freaking go win the title with what you have, because you don't have peanuts. Other teams have problems. Quit complaining.
Do they have enough?
We'll find out.
Yeah, they don't. Come on.
Nate, you never freaking know what's going to happen in a 7-game series, nor do you know what's going to happen 2 months from now in terms of injuries. A lot of
You're just hanging on to this LeBron thing.
When is it ever the best team at full strength winning a title? Or the two best teams at full strength competing for a title? It doesn't work that way.
It's almost every year in the NBA.
It's such an anomaly to be at full strength at that time of the year. It doesn't happen. You win with what you have, what's available, and you go out there and do it. Did anyone think that they were going to come back from down 3-1 and beat the Warriors? No. So don't tell me it couldn't happen. That they can't win with what they have this
really,
year.
Really upset about it.
Yeah, LeBron irritates me.
Well, remember that Draymond got robbed out of a playoff series.
Oh, that's right. That's right. The NBA stole that title from them by suspending Draymond for his behavior.
10 minutes from now, Bobby Marks, the front office insider for The Vertical, is going to be joining us to lead us up to tomorrow's trade deadline and let us know if Magic Johnson is qualified for his post as the president of basketball operations. In fact, we'll ask him who's going to end up ultimately being better in their position, Magic or Vlade. That's when we return in 5 minutes on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK.